I'd like to talk about this is somewhat old-fashioned spin currents compared to the second part of Garrett's talk, and I want to acknowledge the people who do the work. If I press this, is that? This one? Ah, okay. Of Hanan Dairy, Lukasz Zawinski, and Perrine Dalel. As you will see, I actually have in here 1.5 engineers. Perrine actually spent several years in computer architect design and device. And he wants to do a PhD in physics. Hanan is, has a PhD from the Technion, but he's really more in the electrical engineering department, but in optics and so on, so he's more of a physicist. Lukasz is all physics. He's the rigorous guy. Well, in this spin workshop, I can go through the basics very quickly. The idea of spintronics basically is the memory, the electron spin, is used in one fashion in the magnetization. Its charge is used in the other. So when you want to actually load the memory into the process, it's a bit of a chore, right? So integration is the purpose. Now, so you want to generate spin polarization, and you want to control it, and then you want to express it. Now, expression is kind of like a gene expression. You know you have spin polarization in the current. How you're going to measure it, or more important, how you, as an information that pass on to the next little device, and then that's where you can scale it up and do. Oops.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So I've done that. So just so that, can you see it?
Just bear in mind what Bertrand Russell says. Don't take yourself too seriously. It's not good for your health. So what we want to do is to actually try to figure out a device on paper. And the criteria is that it has to work at room temperature. It has to use the existing demonstrated capability in the lab, at least. And that you want to use electrical rather than optical. Oops. But I got a little bit of optical stuff for McDonald. We talk about the spin transistor, where there's injection or extraction. There's also the what we call the spin transference, by analogy with the transistor. And then the result is magnetoresistance amplification, which I will explain. So the first thing is about injection, that we're basically using the old idea by Mott from the 1930s, or Mott and Massey's book. You can look at it. If you have magnetization here, you can throw unpolarized electron in and it will be polarized, right? Well known to neutron scatterers. And then there was a lot of questions about fringe fields, proximity, induced orders. Well, I think Ofshelm's group's experiment pretty much demonstrated that it really, the fact that manganese and it depends on the magnet, whether these two, the polarization can be power and the power blows all of these things apart, the experiments can be explained by reflection. So I just summarize here, and particularly
close experiment was reviewed by Garrett. In fact, the reason I can summarize all of this in one slide of our theory is that Garrett gave you a very good introduction. I foresaw that. So this is in practice how we want to model it. I will show you later on an experiment that says that the polarization of the injected current. Now, we want to talk about injection. We go from here into here. That's just a transmission calculation. So we do the transmission calculation, and then we fold it over with the density of states, you know, in the standard way. And you do it for the forward bias and reverse bias. You see their configurations are a little different. So this is the for the spin up and spin down forward and reverse bias. So what you need to do, this is to fold this over. You have to fold the red and white over. The total current is folded over. The total current has to be conserved. So you have to choose your point, right? So the polarization, this is not a theoretical prediction. We basically use the doping, kind of like what the experimentalists like John Crowell, Paul Crowell use, and get the reproduced polarization so that we can do calculations later. All right. So this is the kind of transmission calculations we do. The exchange splitting, of course, plays a big role. And this is the Yonkers experiment. This is probably one of the first that had very high, 15-12% or so. At low temperature, at high temperature it goes down, and it is ascribed to the fact that at high temperature the electrons travel here, and this is the LED, the emitted light that's measured the polarization. So the measured polarization, if you take an account of how much it would decay at high temperature, so you take the experimental and remove what you think is that, then you get about 30% injection efficiency. Okay, and then with magnesium oxide barrier, you can also inject it into a semiconductor with very high efficiency, 50% at room temperature. That's what we're basing our theory on. Then want to acknowledge the fact we didn't invent any new theory. The diffusion and the theory and the particularly Michael Flatte and use electric field drift is included in the diffusion is important to us. So basically what you need to do is to write down the usual electric field and the gradient driven current, but when you take the gradient, why the electric field is uniform, the spin dependent conductivity is proportional to the density. That's what these gentlemen said. And when you take a gradient, you have an electric field term. Then the spin, each component spin is not conserved. The spin flip time tells you that you can change between the two. All right. And in the calculation, we use the fact that the total current is neutral because if you set up charge disturbance, it relaxes very quickly. Now, metal spin valve works. I don't need to explain. You get the magneto resistance from the two different configurations, about 10%. Actually, somebody claims that you can get it up to 50%. Anyway, it works. You can buy it. And so why doesn't it work in spin valve? Well, I think Garrett has already pointed out, but with a slightly different thing. The semiconductor, in order to get an injection, you can't use ohmic contact. You have to use a tunnel junction. So the tunnel barrier resistance has to be high compared to the semiconductor. So this drags down the 1%, 10% to very small. You can get it up a little bit by
by making this small, okay? And experimentalists even in metals have done that. But even so, the reasonable estimate is still about 1%. That is why you can't use a straightforward spin ball. On the other hand, so the other thing that we want to do, so you want to put more than two of these electrodes, if you like, or tunnel junctions or Schottky barrier, which is ferromagnet into semiconductor. Okay, we did this recess just because Paul did. That's why I asked him, why did you need this? Well, if he said he didn't need it, we're going to take this off. But so now, to our surprise in the literature, that even with all those CIP configurations in the metal case, they've always solved this by making a one-dimensional. The one-dimensional model is to basically follow this flow here and here. So therefore, you see always these, vertical. So this becomes vertical. Now, but if you want to build a whole lot of these guys, like Paul Kroll show, you can really. They are transverse. And we show that first by a simple numerical calculation, this two-dimensional flow is important. If you just look at the picture, you see this comes in here, and then there's a flow starting down here. Well, they're going to add to the flow. And clearly, you're going to lose the spin. You can't have this wider than the spin diffusion length. Okay? So the performance depends on the diffusion length. So just look at the spin valve. We can also then make a one-dimensional model, but with the injection going down like this, which actually you see how it works. This is done for the numerical calculation. For a given ratio, beta is gives you the spin finesse, if you like. So this is the barrier conductivity, the total barrier conductivity for alpha compared to the conductance compared to the conductance of semiconductor, n-type semiconductor. Therefore, you need it to know that its height, its cross section. Okay, for the junction, and then then we get the conductances from that model, and here's the two-dimensional diffusion calculation, and the dots are, and one-dimensional reverse, really quite good. So that's for a closed channel. The metal people have always liked to do an open channel. In other words, they, for example, have a normal, the copper wire runs all the way along here. Well, it actually degrades the performances in the semiconductor if you do that. So that's been published. How about more than two terminals? Well, the metal people have already known, so they use it to make devices in metal, because Johnson and Silsby, they take two lines and then they make measurements off, right? Yaidama also. I mix up the experimentalism theories here because these guys did experiments as well as theory, and Gary Bauer had several very clever all-metal three-terminal device proposals. Last week, Garrett told me about this Otani paper, and that's very nice. Now, notice how small these things are. They're 0.1 micron or less. So these are three ferromagnetic wires, so two of them would be a spin valve. And they said if you use the third one to measure, you can magnify the. So the current only passes through these two. You can magnify by measuring it. So how it works is the following. if the first two, these two are parallel, and the third or anti-parallel, you can tell the difference by measuring the voltage versus the current that goes through it. Okay, that gives you a, and then you switch the magnetization. As you switch the magnetization forward and back, you get a change in the voltage, all right, or resistance. And if you do it for the anti-parallel one, you get 50% higher. So you can, this is a good readout in a metal case. Now, in a semiconductor case, there are a lot of experiments. So I refer to Paul Kroll's talk. And theories, there's a bunch of three-terminal devices suggestions. I won't review them. So because I want to tell you one about one which in principle should work at room temperature and depend on the injection of the ferromagnetic Schottky barrier. Okay, so this is it. What you do is that you inject the electron in here, it's called a source, and it will flow in these two directions. Okay? Let me see if I, yeah. So the idea is that, well, for example, you can play lots of games with it, but let's fix the magnetization of these two and just say, well, I want to measure whether this guy is parallel to this guy or anti-parallel. That will give me an information storage in here of one or zero, right? And how does that express as a current? So then you take these two voltages, just use freshman physics to balance these two circuits such that there's no current in here. But of course, even when there's no current, there has to be, because of the distribution, I'll show you later, because of the splitting of the chemical potentials of up and down electrons in here, which survives in here, that's the point. That there's got to be imbalance here so that the spin current still goes through here. So this is a pure spin current. And here's how you use it. See, when it's parallel, you set the voltage and then you fix it when it's parallel. So then you can use some device to write 0 or 1. Well, if it's 1, say, I never remember which is which, but to computer scientists, this is very important, apparently. So, you know, I don't know whether high voltage is one, low voltage is one, for example, in CMOS. But so it's already set, so there's no current going through here. And I'll demonstrate there's actually a very measurable current if it's anti-parallel. Then what you have integrated memory with current that comes out of here. All right, sorry, this is the explanation. I should have shown you that as I go along. So the physics is how to figure out what this current is, what you mean by measurably finite. Okay, the integration part is now transparent. Now, going back to the spin valve configuration, let's just ignore this. I should just draw one without that. This is well known in metals also, although in semiconductor it's quantitatively a little different. When you have, well, let's go with the spin. You see, when you have parallel spins, let's go with the current first. It's easier to understand. When you have parallel spins, of course, you know, the ups and the downs, they just, the both current goes right through. Whereas here, the up current, the up spin current, sees a band which is actually before what's a down band, so it has to adjust. And the down one is not very high, and then it has a higher junction. So they all have to add up to a constant current. Okay, and so if you look at that, the
difference between the two configurations. The currents are not very different. That's why the same valve doesn't work, right? Well, we got the reason, but this is a manifestation how it doesn't work. Well, but if you actually integrate this and look at the deviation of the spin current, say the spin up chemical potential, they are very different. Look at the numbers. Look at the slope. They are about the same. That's why the current. So between these two, so I'm plotting basically the calculation between here and here. So that's why it doesn't work. Now, so the point is not to, whatever you do, don't try to measure, this is our philosophy, the current, even the bits, right? So trying to make use of this. So the first way is, I guess I misspoke, I don't want to make use of the current, is to say that if you fix this voltage here relative to that one such that in the power configuration there is no net current going through it, and you can see it, this is a two-dimensional calculation, it's a bit laborious but it can be done. Shows you this in this little square as a function of position, the current density, you see you have the color scheme, you see for the para one, the net current is zero. If you integrated it out from, sorry, it's here, from zero to one, it integrated to zero, right? Actually, if you plot out the spin up and spin down, one of them is spin up, the other one is spin down, so you have a spin current, you see, this minus this is not zero. Oh, it's shown here. Okay, that's the difference, J up minus J down, in this square. Now, when you have anti spin current, this the very large difference between the chemical potential of the spin up and the spin down in here, you see, make the net current now is finite, and you can also see it in the spin current. It's kind of strange. So this the effect is that there is spin effect between these two. It does set up a big spin effect, but you want it to be transferred to here to measure it, not around here, because around here there's not much you can maneuver with. So that's the transistor part. Now, it actually has a very good analogy, so we downloaded this from the web, how a bipolar transistor works. It's completely analogous. If you look at this guy, bipolar transistor, it's back-to-back diodes, right? PN and NP diode. And here, think of, take a razor blade and cut it off, a very strong razor blade. It's a back-to-back two spin valves, right? And here, the length is determined by the spin diffusion length, and here it's recombination length, because if you let this guy go through here, or it's just like here, if you let the electron go through here, it will disappear if the spin flip is very strong. Here, if the recombination is very strong, it won't make it past to the end, right? So those two are, in other words, you have two component holes in the electrons, right? We have spin up and spin down. The equations look exactly the same. So, in the case of bipolar transistor, if you now depress the voltage a little bit, nothing happens. If you depress a lot, this thing will come right through. All right. So that's like our P to AP bimodal operation. So the current here also goes from zero to finite, and our current goes from zero to finite, but the message it carries is the spin, not the voltage. So this is a non-volatile memory. Okay, so just to so we'll have to show you the magnitude. Well,
the magnitude of the current is always adjusted. So we'll show this as a function of width, you see? Because people say, well, all you have done is freshman physics of Wheatstone bridge balancing. So where is the transistor action? Well, one way to show is to show that how the effect, the reading can go away. So let's do this as a function of this width, okay? The parallel current is fixed to be zero. This is the room temperature noise. All right, so we put the noise in. And then in the anti-parallel case, for 80 second spin picosecond spin flip time, which is roughly what is at room temperature for gallium arsenide, this, the red line here, is the current bounded by the noise for the anti-parallel, for these two anti-parallel spin current that will go through the third terminal. So you see, this is if you with a 1.1 micron and 1 micron here, it will be about some nanoamps. So you can definitely measure it. It's definitely distinguishable. If you have the right width here, if it's too long, then it's like splitting the PN junction into the bipolar into two PN junctions. Here it's like having two transistors, spin valves, so that won't work either. This is for silicon. We don't talk about silicon because we don't know what's going on, right? You don't have optical tools. But, in fact, this should work just as well for silicon. That's also published if you are interested in it. But you can also do dynamics. Unlike the Ohtani, where you just follow it, really, it's statically. What we do is we just flip this thing, okay? Because the splitting, you see, in the anti-parallel one is very large compared to the parallel one, so the actual chemical potential for the different configurations are different, and you can make use of this. So when you flip this thing, whether it's parallel or anti-parallel, they have different AC response current. This is parallel, this is anti-parallel. So that, again, you can put some AC noise into it. This is done treating this not as a tunnel current, but as a capacitor, which is it's a leaky capacitor. So that's the equivalent circuit. You're talking to a theorist now. You take a wire here, you pass a current through it. Yeah. So everything is gigahertz operation.
So this is not a response to an instantaneous magnetization, but taking into account the time of how it takes magnetization.
I think so, yeah, here. 40 femtoseconds, what we use here. Is that right? No, sorry, that's the capacitance, 40 femtofarad. No, we take care of the speed, yes.
Okay, it does not just
It's a 2-pi pulse. Yeah, you just send a pulse in. But the pulse time is around 1 nanosecond.
Do you know how the LLG equation sort of gives the response of the magnetization?
LLG equation? We don't do that part. We say that's given to us. This will give me the rotation speed. Sorry, I should say the rotation speed of the magnetization.
But what is the orbit magnetization? So
just
this way?
Yeah, just rotate it. The rest, I come to you. I'll buy it off your shelf. Okay? Not calculated. You wanted to know how it's done.
Yeah,
That's why I say it's a theoretical.
What will you take for the magnetization reduced?
Just as a function of time, it goes. With the same speed.
And what is that time on the scale?
1 nanosecond.
It's 1 nanosecond.
Yeah. So this response is about 2 or 3 nanoseconds, yes. But actually, you see it here, and it's good enough, so it's about the same. Okay, oh, yeah, but actually, you know, being physicists, we say, okay, so this is a dynamic, readable memory, but you can also have fun with it. That is, you can keep this constant and flip this guy, and then as it rotates, you can detect its rotation, so the dynamics can be measured by the current. Okay, again, the dynamics, I rely on the metal people. So you can use this to measure polarization. Now, I don't know if you know how light polarization is measured. If you know, you excite this right electron hole. Normally what you do is that you take the electron, you have a halfway plate. So basically you need an optical table. Well, although the optical table can be made now quite small, according to the commercial advertisements on the web, but they're not this small. Okay. In this case, you just have an LED. You light goes in here, excited the upper, so that the electron goes this way, the hole gets sweeped that way, and the electrons come in here more or less uniform, even if not, you can adjust that. Now remember, here the easy direction has to be perpendicular because that's the direction that the polarized light would excite it. So you can see the current would say if it's sigma plus, the current will be going up, so the up currents will go, the spin up will go through easily here, not so easily here, and then you use electronics, you can find the differences, and this is the current asymmetry. Again, as a function of the width of these two guys, make them the same width. Obviously, you can't, they can't be much longer than the spin length. Okay, so you can have a little fun with that. But I want to finish in half an hour, more or less made it. We've also done some other work, but the basic principle is all here. The rest is engineering. Just to summarize, the three terminal is used like two back-to-back spin valves. So the nonlinear action is the fact that the spin effect on one valve for the current is very small, but if you transfer the chemical potential splitting to the third one, you can or to the other spin valve, you can measure the current quite well, and that's how you. Effectively, you have magnified the magnetoresistance. So that is the amplification, not the power. You know, God knows how much current you need to flip the thing. So to amplify the current that was driving the magnetization, that's hopeless. Well, but anyway, that's not the right physics. So the basic component is that these junctions, in principle, you can build it. People build it already at room temperature. And the thing to take home is in these lateral geometries, you really have to worry about the dimension of your gates and so on compared to the spin diffusion length. And we have some fun with the 5 electrodes. That's where Parin came in. Well, actually, when we got stuck with the with the capacitance, actually, a referee who says, "Well, what about parasitic capacitance?" You know, my first reaction is, "What is parasitic?" capacitance. So they asked some very sharp and very good questions. So Perrine gave us an answer, which we said, nah, that won't work. So he called his father, which gave us another answer. His father retired from HP or somewhere, so knows all the answers. So we should put his name up on there too. And the other thing is that you can put two more electrodes, you know, two more of those Schottky barriers, and you can show you can make a NAND gate. Actually, yeah. And just like in quantum computing, one logic gate is basic. Once you can do one, you can do the other. Now, the thing is that we can reconfigure that gate, right? You can change the magnetization so that it can become other logic operations. And it's scalable. You take the current from the one, and then you use that current, amplify it, drive the electrode, set them up, and you can do the other one. So we are actually very keen in, on the piece of paper, build this thing. You know, to see how you can configure the whole thing and so on. So that's why we really needed an engineer. The rest of us just kind of help to make sure the physical process works. Because the engineer do it, they know it works, so they just, you know, put it together. We don't know when you put two things together it will work, so we're kind of trying to get numbers to make sure that it reasonably works, right? Okay, thank you for your attention.
So, looks like this looks like the sort of conventional semiconductor circuit, except the metal pieces can be magnetic metals. Is that kind of how you think about
this? Yeah, but the physics under the hood is completely. Yeah, completely different. You cannot even. We tried. So the challenge would be: can you simulate this with two? Can you simulate the spin channel with two resistors or two resistors and capacitors? I let you do that. I don't think you can. I think that chemical potential is fairly involved. I thought at first it could be done.
Even with a two-channel conduction?
Yeah, just think of it as a two, you know, can you write down an equivalent circuit allowing you to split the resistor into two, right? I mean, I don't know, Garrett, have you tried that? You have something like that, but it, right? Well, I mean, Alan was asking a friendly question, isn't it just ordinary electronics? My answer is, underneath it, it's not.
I wasn't saying, I mean, I was just trying
I was trying to.
Ordinary electronics plus, you know, that you put the magnetic stuff in,
yeah.
In the source and the drain.
Yeah.
Right.
So right. That looks ordinary, but what it does is that it maneuvers all the chemical, spin-dependent chemical potentials. Right. The reason it look on the surface, because we want to build a car that looks like a car. Because we didn't know what else, you know, you have to reinvent everything. That. And besides, it won't sell at first, right? It's got to look like a car before it sells, even though underneath you have horse manure and whatever, driving.
So are there, you know, can you imagine situations where on a chip now, if, you know, Intel could put down permalloy as easily as copper or whatever they use?
Well, not as easily. They have to be switchable. But you look at the metal people, they build all that part. They sell them, right? In your computer, you think...
The hard disk, you mean?
Yeah, why do you think the hard disk is so cheap? Now, then there's also flash memory. So you say, well, how can this beat flash memory? Yeah, eventually it will. Right now, it's like the first car compared to a horse. It's not the first car was not faster than a horse. Remember? Yeah.
And two questions. One question is, we have all these experiments on the long-longer measurement of the bulk effect by fault. Are you able to model that quantitatively?
Yes. Yes. In fact, I'm ashamed to say that until you told me about that paper. Somehow we had one of his papers, but not the one that really mattered. The one you said really mattered was the three-terminal one, right?
No, I'm not talking about Paul Crowell.
Paul Crowell's one. Yeah, no.
The tall glass
one. Yes, no, we can. Yes, we can simulate whatever he does. But I'm saying that we can even simulate all Tani's. Configuration. Yes and no, because the diffusion equation might break down. It's so small. You think it's okay? Because that the length is still smaller.
Yeah, no problem.
Oh, and also the wavelength is much smaller. What am I thinking, right? Metal. I'm not. It should be okay. So we can do that.
Yeah, but I think four will be much more difficult, right? You have all these band bendings.
But that's what we do.
Yeah.
Okay. No. In fact, he designed that. But you know, as he said, he likes to do it step at a time. He wants to see if our idea is right, but you know, he wants to make sure every single electrode works before, right? Otherwise, if it doesn't work, he can't diagnostic it. He was very modest in saying he just wanted to do it, you know.
My second question was that there are some competing type of transistors also, the bipolar type, which have been developed by Zutich and also, I think, by Michael. Would it be nice to have some table to see the performance of your transistor compared to these others next to each other?
We haven't done that. You want the performance at room temperature? I don't know that performance at room temperature. Do you?
No, but
that's the point. I can't compare something which doesn't work at room temperature. Let me be very frank.
Okay, that's no need comparison because they won't work at room temperature.
Well, I didn't say they won't, but they weren't concentrating on that.
Somebody remind us what the idea of the other bipolar spin transistors is.
I don't know.
We need Michael. Yeah. I mean, it would have been fun to have Michael here, but he can't be here today.
Yeah. It's all for magnetic semiconductors.
Yes. And it play with concentration of ball, I think, yeah?
Yeah.
So then this much. But I don't know, I don't remember the case now.
Right.
But these somehow claims that by the whole concentration you can come.
Yeah. That part I know, but.
Gradient of magnetization there or something. But I don't remember.
Right.
So we don't have a magnetic semiconductor that works at room temperature yet.
But you could imagine, you're talking about a memory device, which might not be a bad thing, but you could combine this new attribute of the electrodes, of the metal pieces in your circuit, with ordinary, gates and stuff to do all kinds of other things, right?
Yeah. Oh, but that's like trying to use a motor to drive a horse. Then it's limited by the horse speed. What this is, we were so naive. We actually, until Taurin told us, we said, wow, look at this. We can throw away the clock. You know, in a computer, the reason you have a clock is that all the result has to be there at the same time. It doesn't work if you have a nonlinear signal passed before the other one, right? Well, in our case, once the current has driven the magnet, it can wait while you do other things. So, but Perrine said, no, 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 we've gone further than that. We can beat you with so they say, you might as well.
I'd like to comment on the literature from the other Gedanken, from the other dimension here, that is, which was, again, developed conceptually by Michael Platteri myself, you know, which is unipolar. And I think in principle, we have talking principles here, would work, I think.
It's set up by the space.
It uses three domains, the next to each other, magnetic domains oriented in
that. Is that the one that needs the, I'm sorry, I didn't make
a semiconductor, I guess.
Yeah,
that
in mind,
yes.
Example,
I live in fear of missing, leaving something out, and I left you out.
Well,
I'm sorry. I know there are a lot of heroes of this in here. I just, I'm sorry about that.
So I think that that doesn't have any intrinsic restriction.
On temperature, yes.
Other than the material issues.
You needed the half metallic. Did you need the half metallic? There's one suggestion where I read that you needed the half metallic.
No, that is
the
speculum drag stuff. No, this is a magnetic semiconductor in which you.
Oh, you need a magnetic.
Domain.
Yeah, again, you need a magnetic semiconductor. Yeah, yeah.
So in a way, you might say.
Again.
You have to find a magnetic semiconductor at room temperature.
Right. We can't wait. I mean, we say, look, here it is. Well, look, if we hadn't found this, we would have had some dreamy, dreamy type materials, but.
So when you talk to, in some sense, speaking as a physicist, a theoretical physicist even, it seems like it's not a huge leap. Have you talked to people who really are experts on semiconductor technology, and what do they say to you? Tell them, build a memory like this.
Very, very, very discouraging.
Okay, what do they say?
Either they don't understand it, they just say, well, can you beat the current silicon technology, CMOS? If you say no.
I guess that means.
CMOS.
When you're talking about.
Say no, they might. You can just see their mental shutter comes down. You can't explain anything to them.
Yeah, you have to have at least the prospect of doing some particular thing dramatically better before anybody will listen to you.
I think that's crazy. Was Bardeen and Britten's transistor dramatically better? But everybody could see the potential. Right.
People probably could see that it was potentially dramatically better.
Yeah. Hey. This is the memory is built on the chip with the current.
Well, so let's say, how does it compare with semiconductor memory potentially? I don't even know how these work. SRAM, DRAM, whatever.
Yeah. Well, in the end, the flash memory, for example, takes a lot of power. So.
And flash is very, very slow, so it's not.
Because it's the power consumption is huge.
But the question of how big an issue it is, the things aren't really.
People are going to make it better, I'm sure, even in flash. But potentially that's going to be a dead end.
This is.
It's metal. How do you control metal has no nonlinear elements, I'm sorry to tell you. Remember that.
You can make a memory out of the magnet's nonlinear. Right? You can make a memory out of in fact,
fine.
The memory element you're relying on.
But it's the electronics that we care about.
You're just using it to measure the magnetization, really, aren't you?
Well, except I can use it to make a logic gate also.
NAND stuff would be interesting for like FPGA operations maybe. I don't know what the current state of the art is, but it maybe can
I'm actually not qualified to kind of, you know. I mean, I was hoping the engineers would help me I like them to be critical, but I don't like them to
be pessimistic.
Basically, not pessimistic, basically says, forget it, right?
Well, you know, I think the semiconductor companies are really interested in new ideas because they know that their ideas are coming to an end.
But this is too new because it hasn't even been demonstrated in the lab.
Yeah.
We have an industrial advisory board. They all said, this is a very good idea. You know, kind of without saying, in quotation from a bunch of physicists. Yeah. But so they advise us to get a what I would call a sugar daddy to actually fund this thing.
Right.
Did you ask for a patent?
Yes. There was, these guys said it's too far in the future. So they said, oh, we were granted, one of the devices was granted a temporary license. But the university wants us to pay for the continuation, not the, for the first year, for the continuation. But for us, it's fun. I mean, we're at least, the physics part of the side of the house are learning new things. But maybe it's just ordinary engineering. But for us, you know, the fact that we can get away with certain things, we would never have thought of it. So, yeah, it is not. So again, remember what Bertrand Russell said. So it's not high power spin current. On the other hand, I have a little challenge there for the spin current people. Okay?
I think it's fair to say, Lou, that it's